This is PhotoBizX episode number 292. And today we're talking with a headshot photographer and going deep into advanced Facebook ads, Google AdWords, and optimizing your website to not only attract your perfect target client, but sort them into the area of photography thereafter, then go in and retarget them with advertising, with ads specifically aimed at that client and what they're after. This is going to be very cool. Our guest is Michael Schacht, and that interview is coming up in just a minute.
Are you planning to have a successful wedding and portrait photography business? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and business experts to fast-track your success. Welcome to the PhotoBiz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here from Impact Images, and welcome to this episode of the podcast. This one is going to be a ripper today. Some advanced strategies, some really cool ideas to think about and improve your website, your marketing, your advertising, the whole gamut. It's all going to be covered in today's interview with Michael. Now, I did say in the intro that he is a headshot photographer, and that's pretty much what we're focusing on. But trust me when I say this will apply to you, whether or not you're shooting weddings or portraits, or if you're covering multi-genres with your photography business. Yeah, you're going to love what Michael has to share. Before we get into that, last Monday I was invited to go and talk at a Sydney university to photography students that will be graduating at the end of the year. The lecturer, Mark, who invited me down to come and talk to his students, teaches business, which is how he knew about the PhotoBizX podcast. He's also based on the Central Coast. And back in the day, I think 10 or 15 years ago, he actually came to our studio with a bunch of high school students that were studying photography. Now he's a university lecturer. And the idea, just like last year when I went down to the university, was to talk to the students about what they can expect when they basically go out into the big wide world and start their photography businesses. I think just like any bunch of photographers in a room, there was a wide range of specialties that these students were looking to go into. Some of them were definitely more advanced and had already started charging for their work. But the challenge for me was to come up with some useful information for the students who not only love photography, they want to make a living out of it without overwhelming them with too much stuff all at once. So on the way down, on the train, I put a post up into the members' Facebook group and I asked the PhotoBizX members, what would you tell these students if you had a chance to talk to them, or what do you wish that you knew before starting your photography business? And there were some fantastic answers here. I'm going to share a few with you now. Melissa Love, she says, whatever photography path they choose, they should be proud of it because the communities are amazing. And I absolutely have to agree with that. If the PhotoBizX community is used as an example, because yeah, it is amazing. Chris Schulbach, he says, don't think of building a photography business, just build a business. And he says, I can elaborate from there, which is exactly right, isn't it? I mean, if we go into a photography business with the idea of building a business, then it doesn't really matter, you know, whether or not you're a plumber, an electrician, a medical specialist, a retail outlet, or a photographer. I mean, business is business. It's all about attracting your perfect clients, delivering a product and a service that they want, and initiating a monetary transaction with that client. So yeah, I totally agree with Chris. It's not about making photography that the focus if you're looking to build a successful business. I love what Dee Brummer says. My favorite quote, comparison is the thief of joy. Do your own thing and don't compare to what everyone else is doing or charging. I think that's great advice, Dee. Seshu, he says, there ain't no such thing as an overnight success in this business. It takes patience and persistence and being open to learning all the time. Yep, got to agree there. Funnily enough, Jonas Peterson jumped straight in after Seshu's comment and said, Seshu, that's not true. And I'm guessing with Jonas, I mean, he's a bit of an outlier because, you know, he started his business with, a 30-odd thousand strong email list that he built up through blogging. So, yeah, you know, if you have an email list with tens of thousands of people that are fans of what you do and love what you do, then kicking off a photography business is going to be a little bit easier. And, you know, in Jonas's case, he absolutely hit the ground running. He advertised that he was a photographer and was pretty much booked out overnight. So, yeah, but that's not the usual way. What are some other ones here? Ian Sim, he says that marketing is not a dirty word, but he's guessing that I'd tell them that anyway. And that's true, isn't it? I mean, marketing isn't a dirty word. Without marketing, then how else do we attract a perfect target client? I love what Anita Watkins says. You need to believe hard in your own value before anyone else will. Don't look to clients for your self-worth. And Anita is one of these photographers that has just gone from success to success, and her prices have gone up every year. She's hitting new record months and years as she grows her business, and all because she does believe in her own self-worth and believes in the value of her work and her photography. And she's a perfect example of that. Todd Muscoff, he says, starving isn't noble. Do the best work you can that people will pay you for. Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's a lot to be said about, well, there has been a lot said about the starving artist, but really, I mean, if you don't want to be that photographer, do you? I mean, you know, if you want to be the artist, do what John Morales did, build a fantastically successful business so we can fund the art that you create. Yeah, I totally agree. James Barber, he says, how to value myself as a photographer and not give in to the whole free economy too much. And that's something that we hear a lot about, particularly if you follow marketing podcasts and read a lot of marketing books. There's this big thing, this big push to give everything away for free, you know, to attract your perfect clients. But I mean, you just can't afford to do that if you are running a business, particularly a photography business where, you know, we do get paid for the time that, I don't want to say we get paid for the time. We're not exchanging time for money, but we can't afford to shoot for free. It just doesn't work like that. Not all the time anyway. I mean, there certainly are exceptions. I've got no qualms at all about shooting for free to generate sales on the back end, but you can't do everything for free. Linda, my wife, she made a fantastic contribution. She said to make sure that you have a Linda in your business. that definitely makes life easier. William Gray, he kicked off an interesting topic that went back and forth a little bit in the group. He says, you're not a photographer, you're an image maker. 90% of his clients want more bang for their buck, motion and stills if they're paying for a day of image making. So I do see things going that way. But, you know, there are people like Dan Cripps who, you know, is 100% a still shooter, like you may be and I am. But I do see a changing time where photographers are starting more and more to offer video as an option as well, or an inclusion in their stills packages. It's working in family photography with people like Alison Redman. It's working in commercial photography for William Gray. And I know wedding photographers are starting to do it too. So yeah, I certainly see things moving that way, but there'll always be room to be a specialist stills photographer. I love what TOY says. She says, find what you love doing. It'll make the 80 hours working for yourself to avoid the 40 for someone else so much more enjoyable. That's so good, T. I love it. Anyway, it went on and on. There were some absolutely fantastic comments and some great advice for the students. I don't know, what would you tell yourself if you were starting over again? And what would you tell students that were looking to go into photography as a business, you know, to pay the bills? You know, standing there in front of that classroom of photographers, it was hard not to think, wow, you know, you just don't know what you're in for. It's going to be a tough road to make a successful business, particularly when we started talking about marketing and advertising on Facebook and Instagram. All the students, I've got to say 90% of the students screwed up their noses and they said, oh, we hate ads on our Instagram feeds and, you know, we're not on Facebook anymore. We don't want to see those ads. And, you know, so I put the question to them, well, how do you expect to get in front of your potential clients? The common answer amongst the students was organically. Yet none of them had more than 1,000, or I think one student had more than 1,000 followers on Instagram. I mean, that's not enough to build a business. You know, it's going to take years, certainly a lot of hard work to build up organic reach to attract enough clients to your business. So yeah, like hearing that, I thought, wow, you guys are in for a real shock. And the sooner you get familiar and understand advertising and marketing and put those things into place and make them work for you, the better chance you've got of making this whole thing work. Obviously, there's more to it than that, but that's one easy way to get in front of your clients quickly. Yeah, love to hear your thoughts. If you had to give yourself one piece of advice, if you were to start over again, what would it be? Let us know in the comments area, and you can find them at the bottom of the show notes for today's episode at photobizx.com/292.
And now, a macro look at the last episode.
In last week's episode, I interviewed Owen Mathias. He is a Welsh-based photographer. He's also a university lecturer on the topic of marketing and business. Well, I think it's actually mainly marketing. So it was great to hear his take on the way he's been building his business. And if you check out his Instagram feed, you'll see that his branding is spot on. Interestingly, as good as it is and as funny and divisive as his branding is on Instagram, it wasn't the number one platform that's working to attract new clients to his business. In addition to his branding, we explored how he does his customer service, how he treats and looks after his customers, which was great. Had some great feedback from listeners on Owen's approach there. And we also went into Google AdWords, which was very, very cool. Very interesting, different strategies to what I've heard from other photographers using the same platform to attract their perfect clients. Get back and have a listen to Owen if you haven't, and definitely check out his Instagram feed and his blogging because, he's got a very cool style. He has some pretty divisive type comments or captions on his photography, and it's pretty clear who his perfect target clients are. And I expect once brides start to see his branding and his messaging, then business is really going to take off and go nuts.
You're listening to the number one photography business podcast with Andrew Helmich, photobizx.com.
Alrighty, we're going to jump into this interview with Michael Schacht in just a second. If you are hearing this announcement, it does mean you are listening to the free podcast episode. And I can still promise that you will get a ton of great info from Michael in the first half or two-thirds of the interview. That last little portion, I am saving that for premium members only. And I do that every week with every interview. I save, a part, but it is the best part for premium members. That's what the membership is all about. I do want the members to have the very best, most actionable, detailed content I can possibly get them from every single guest. And when Michael started to go deep into his Facebook ad strategy to attract headshot clients, I thought, okay, this is gold. And then down we went, deep into his processes. And yeah, they were very, very cool. So if you want to hear the full interview with Michael today, grab a $1 trial membership. You can do that at photobizx.com/try. You can sign up for a dollar. It's a 30-day trial membership. You get full access to the interview with Michael today. You can access the full back catalog, all the interviews in the back catalog. Plus, I'll send you an invite to the premium members Facebook group. You can interact, have a look around, see what the group is all about. Yeah, I think you'll agree. I'm a bit biased, but I'm going to say the best group of photographers you will ever find online. And it's a group of photographers that really are passionate about seeing each other succeed and build more successful photography businesses. Yeah, that the help, the advice, the care shown by each member inside the group is phenomenal. I really struggle with that word, phenomenal. come and join the membership, see what it's all about, and yeah, you won't regret it. You will see, you'll see massive improvements in your business, but all you have to do is to be able to implement some of the things that you hear, and then I can make that promise that you will see dramatic changes to your business because, that's where all the best stuff is. It's in the members area and in the content that I save for members.
Welcome to another Great Eye for Business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
Today's guest is a portrait and headshot photographer based in Chicago, Illinois. He spent his younger days sketching the photos from the covers of photography magazines. And from sketching, he went on to painting, and eventually he lost interest in the art programs at his school and started taking college classes. At the time, he didn't believe a career as an artist was even a reasonable goal. So he went on to learn about sales and marketing after college and worked for a few companies in various sales and management roles in the construction industry. When the housing market crashed, he decided it was time to go back to his artistic roots. And today, he describes himself as a commercial and editorial portrait photographer, with the core of his business being headshots. He also says, "I help people earn trust via an image," meaning he works with everyday people to make sure that their personal branding tells their story. And he openly says on his website that he's the best, so don't ask for a discount unless there's a group of three or more. I love that. I'm talking about Michael Schacht, and I'm rapt to have him with us now. Michael, welcome, mate.
Thanks for having me.
The best.
You did your homework.
I did a little bit. But I love that part on your website that where you say that you're the best, so don't ask for a discount. Do people read that and they take note of it?
I mean, it happens from time to time. The majority of people, I feel, are conditioned to move on to that next, like to hit a call to action before they ever get to that point. But I think it's important to give the people that want to, you know, take it all in and read the whole website, you got to give them something interesting to read.
I love that you say you're the best. You know, do you ever cop stick from other photographers for saying that on your website? I mean, I know it's not blatant, it's not in your face, but it is hidden there and it says it.
I don't know that I've ever caught anything directly. However, I will say that it's kind of the persona I've created. It's a bit of my shtick. I think that the more confident you can present yourself, and for me, like, it's just, I like to walk right up to that line. And I think it does a great job of weeding out the clients that are going to be a problem.
I love it.
It's a qualifier. I have no problem. I don't want to say using profanity, but like, I'll walk right up to that line of what some people would consider inappropriate. And if they consider something on my website inappropriate, then they're probably not a person I want to spend an hour with. And there's somebody that's a better fit for them. And I try to achieve that, you know, through the copy on my website.
So as far as your business now, I mean, do you want to give us a bit of a snapshot? Because I know you are shooting headshots and that's the core of your business, but you do some other things as well, don't you?
I do. Everything starts with a headshot. What I learned over the year, I guess I'll back up a little bit. I got into headshots in 2009, I got into photography in 2009 and quickly got into headshots after realizing the things that I didn't like to do. And what I liked about headshots was the one-on-one relationships. I'm about 6'1" and chasing children around is not my thing. I don't have the temperament for brides. I think that there's people that are suited for different areas of photography, just like any other profession. I think that it's important to find your place and find where you feel comfortable, because that's where you're going to be the most successful. And for me, that was headshots.
So does that mean you did try weddings and portraits and kids and families? You tried all those things out?
You know, the first thing I did, like you mentioned, when the housing market crashed, I picked up a camera. So the first thing I did was I got on Craigslist and I would advertise shooting people's families in the park on the weekends. And we would run around Millennium Park photographing families all day. And I was happy to book like two or three sessions on a weekend because, you know, in real people money, that's a really well-paying gig. Like, I'd charge 150 or 200 bucks to go do a shoot and burn, and I'd be making 600 bucks a weekend. That's in the neighborhood of what I was making in my career. So it was a great segue for me, and I got a taste of what a photography business could really look like. From there, I had a friend that was working for one of the big group buy websites, and she approached me and said, "Hey, I just got this job, and it's my job to find a photographer to sell their services."
Is this like a Groupon type website?
Right. So I was like, "You got to be kidding me." I had like four or five different families on my website. I was like, "There's no way you're going to be able to sell this stuff." And she said, "No, it's really the big thing right now. You don't worry about that. You just tell me how many you think you can sell." So kind of cockily, I said, "I can fulfill as many as you can sell. Like, that's not going to be the problem." And she calls back the next day. "We sold 400 and you have a year to fulfill these." So
wow.
I was now a photographer. So I spent that year doing whatever people asked me to. They were 1 hour photo shoots. So I did birthday parties. I did family photo shoots in the park. I did bar mitzvahs. I had a lot of engagements. Some people brought me to their wedding for an hour. And a lot of like dating profile pictures, which I would now kind of classify as headshots. And that's kind of where I found my in.
Very cool. So when you did that group deal, those 400 shoots, did you actually make any money? Because I hear a lot of horror stories with sites like Groupon.
Well, it depends on how you look at it. Was there an exchange of dollars? Yes. Now, you have to remember where I was coming from. I didn't have a business. Nobody knew who I was. And I didn't know how to market the business. So for me, that was photography school. I took the money I did make from that and bought a nicer camera. I paid for my studio for a year. And without having done that, I don't think I would have had the trajectory that I created otherwise. I think that that helped. I mean, once you make that commitment to a studio, it's sink or swim. So because I may have gotten it a little too early, like I needed it because I couldn't shoot 400 families on the weekends in the park. I needed a place to shoot these people, but I couldn't even tell you how long I would have waited to get a studio if not for that. And I'm still in the same studio today.
Oh, wow. It's amazing. So when you were doing these Groupon or group type package deal shoots for an hour at a time, were you actually starting to book then your own clients on top of those?
So that's a great point. At least at the time, remember, this is 2009 going into 2010. The way that that all worked was that that happened over the holidays. So let's just say, I think like right around the 20th of December was the cutoff or when it started. So from January all the way to October. So we went 10 months and I only fulfilled 100 of those 400 photo shoots. And I thought I was going to get away scot-free. I was like, this is amazing. 300 people are going to just walk away from the money they spent and I'm going to be able to put it all in my pocket. The reality was that was very much not the case. The reality set in that these people wait till the last minute. And I spent October, November, and December fulfilling these things, which was my obligation. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it didn't go the way that I thought. So to your question, eventually I did start to build my own clientele and everything hit at the worst possible time because not only, you know, do we all have our own holidays and, you know, we've got our plans of things that we do over the holidays, but it completely took over my business for that last 3 months. And I wasn't able to take advantage of the new clients that I was getting. It became a little bit of a stumbling block. Now, the beauty of it all was that come January 1st, everything reset. Those obligations had been fulfilled, and I was able to get to work on the headshot business that I had decided that I wanted to run.
Fantastic. So it still was a great catalyst to get you to where you are now and got your start in headshots.
Catalyst is the perfect word. Again, I don't think I would have had the same trajectory without it. And I don't even know how long it would have taken me to figure out that I wanted to be a headshot photographer if I hadn't had that opportunity. Am I telling everyone you should go call Groupon and sign up? Absolutely not. Dollars per hour, I probably made like $7 or $8 an hour, and that's not terribly lucrative. But I had never used a strobe before. I had never done any type of studio photography. So the fact that I was able to make a little bit of money and get amazing training, and not just in the technical stuff, not in the lighting and posing and things like that, but also in the people management. Because when you're shooting on the hour, so every hour, like in December, every hour we had an appointment from 8 a.m. until 8 p.m. And when you're doing that, you're managing people, you're managing expectations, you are the director. And that is a skill that I think only comes with practice. And without that experience, I don't know that I ever would have developed that. Not that it's something that I use every day now, but when I go on location and I'm shooting an office, I rely on those skills that I picked up 10 years ago, hurting children, because it's not all that dissimilar. A lot of these corporate clients, they act the same way that the children that didn't want to be photographed at.
True.
But instead of, you know, grabbing my iPad and showing them Elmo, you know, I figure out how to start a conversation about whatever the ball game that was on last night was, or figure out if they happen to be a parent. Like, I'm a parent, so I have an easy time connecting with other parents. It's usually an easy thing to talk about. So it's relationship building. So I used Elmo to build relationships with children early on, and I use sports and their families to build relationships quickly now. It really is the same tool set.
Yeah, I love it. You must have had some nightmare, stressful moments, like not having shot strobes, booking people back to back. Man, I can't imagine what you went through. Fast forward to today, can you give us a snapshot of what your business looks like now?
Absolutely. I am the most expensive headshot photographer in town. And what I've personally decided was I like those clients better. And it's actually kind of interesting how I got to the number. Are you familiar with Acuity scheduling?
Yes, I actually just signed up for it on the weekend.
Fantastic, fantastic. So I had been fighting a trend in the industry to start using Acuity scheduling. And the issue I was having was I liked to have control of my schedule. I liked to be able to book two or three shoots in a row and then free up other days on my calendar to hang with my family. So I asked myself one day, what's the number that would make it worthwhile for me to, I live about 45 minutes from my studio. So what's the number that would make it worth a drive to the city to go photograph one person, come home and be happy? So I picked that number and I said, that's what my sessions are going to cost. And since doing that, I smile every time I get an email saying I've got a booking. I love the fact that I don't have to talk to most of the potential buyers. I just wait for the email. And then I call them when the notification comes in that you've been paid. I give them a call and say, hey, looks like we've got an appointment scheduled. Let's chat. Who are you? And what's your deal? What are you hoping to achieve? So what that's done to my sales process, it's freed up all of this time, because rather than, I don't want to say wasting time, but like fielding phone calls from people looking for the cheapest solution or responding to emails, like I'm just going to be the most expensive and I'll take what I can get from it. Now, ultimately what happened was I work 25% less and I make 25% more. So it really turned out to like, I shoot 25% less photo shoots, but because I'm charging more, the revenue share is larger. It's great.
That's awesome. And you openly have your pricing on your website.
I do. And, you know, there's different schools of thought on that. When I do AdWords campaigns, I make people opt in for pricing. But in organic search, I think creating the easiest possible sales process, make it, don't put any obstacles in between your client and actually booking you. Like, that's a core belief of mine. And having the prices there, I think, just saves a lot of time.
Sure. So for the listener, the price is $500 and you say there what's included. It's one high res retouched image. That's it. And then they get some other things. They get to choose backgrounds and a proofing gallery and things like that. But it's all there clearly stated on your website.
Again, it's all about being clear. Maybe one point of view might be that it creates less opportunities to dialogue with a potential client. But I think that it also creates less opportunities to be distracted by people that weren't going to book you anyway. I'm in a unique position in that because of the work I've done on my SEO, I get a lot of hits to the website. I rank very well in search for a whole lot of keywords. And because I get so much traffic, I can be picky. And I think that that's something that we all need to be constantly striving for, because the more traffic you get, the more opportunities you have to sell people.
For sure. You brought up a couple of things there that you sort of, they slipped into what you're telling me and sharing. And I think, oh, I've got to ask about that. So there's a few things I want to cover here. You mentioned opt-ins and you said that if someone comes to you via an AdWords campaign, you make them, or you do, you make them opt in to get your price list. But on your website, I mean, I'm looking at it now, that I don't see any options to opt in for anything. It's either buy from me now, schedule an appointment, or go away. And just one second, Michael, I think if my research is correct, you used to have opt-in forms on your website.
Yes.
Okay, why the change and why are you doing it like you are now?
All right, so a couple things. One is I don't think that when you run an AdWords campaign that you should send people to your homepage. I think that's a mistake that a lot of people make.
I agree. Yep.
So you're not probably finding the AdWords campaign page. I actually strip all the navigation off of that page. And I mean, if you were sly and you just copied the front of the URL, you could get to that page and that'd be fine. But ultimately, I feel like there's a industry trend, and not just photography industry, but a marketing trend that's pushing away from email marketing. I mean, we can manage our analytics and see what percentage of people are actually opening the emails and then seeing what percentage of those people are actually clicking through. So ever since the GDPR stuff and all the changes that have been kind of coming through that email marketing industry, I think that there are better ways to do it. The reason I still do it with AdWords when I do run AdWords campaigns is because you're spending so much money to get them to your site. Anything you can do to get something out of it is valuable. So I think with headshots, people don't come to your site and book you once. I think they come to your site a few times. So if you're paying for that click in AdWords, you're going to have to do something to get them to come back, or you're going to pay again and again and again for each of those clicks. And you obviously wouldn't want to do that. That's going to screw up your cost of acquisition. So that's something that we toy around with in an effort to make the most of those clicks.
I get that. I understand that. And I can see the reasoning and your thinking behind that. But what I don't understand, and I understand what you're saying about GDPR too, but the approach you're taking with your, let's say someone, if I come to you via SEO, I search for, you know, Chicago headshot photographer. I'm assuming you're going to come up in position one on page one or somewhere around there. Uh-huh. I click through to your site and let's say I'm not ready to book now. I'm just having a look around, but there's no spot for me to opt in. So, I mean, what makes you think I'm going to book then and there? I mean, you even said then
I
probably
won't.
I don't
think you're going to book then and
there. Right. So what's the chances of me coming back to your website if there's no more interaction?
So if you get to the homepage and bounce, I'm going to let you go. But if you get to a point where you tell me you're an actor or you tell me you are someone in the corporate industry, I am going to retarget Facebook ads to you specific to that segment. So I segment the visitors and then I retarget them specifically.
Okay, this is beautiful. Okay, so for the listener who's getting confused here, if you are, when I go onto Michael's site, if I click on to what I want, if it's a corporate headshot or an actor headshot, then I go to another page, and that's where you're going to have your Facebook pixel that's going to tag me as potential corporate headshot client. Then I'm going to see your ads on Facebook.
Yes.
Love it. Love it. I'm guessing, but I'm going to ask, is that working for you?
Very much so. I believe that people have to interact with your brand a number of times to build trust. And basically what I did was I took my old drip campaign. When I say drip campaign, I mean the email sequence that I would send out to people that opted in for pricing. So the first email they'd get would be, you know, here are my prices. The second email would be some free information. Like, you know, one of the questions people usually have before they book a headshot is, what should I wear? Or the actors would get an email that would show them a list of all of the talent agencies in town and who the contacts are. So just some relatively valuable information. And now I basically drip that content out via Facebook ads.
Okay, so let's say I'm in your target area, which I'm guessing is Chicago or Illinois, and I click through, you know that I'm a potential corporate headshot client, I get tagged. So does that mean the next ad I see in Facebook from you will be your price list? That'll come up in an ad.
It will not, because I have the prices on the website. They already have that information.
Okay, but I'm going to start getting some valuable links to PDFs and information from you to help me make my decision.
Exactly.
Very cool. I love it. Okay. So are you also then using Facebook to create lookalike audiences and things like that, or are you more strategic and specific with your ads?
When I'm doing the retargeted ads, obviously it's just the people that have been to the website or being served ads. As far as creating ads specifically, like outreach type of ads to bring people in that have never been to the website before, I do that specifically with companies. So an example would be, around the corner from my studio is the Chicago Google campus. So they're an easy target because they can literally walk over on their lunch break, be photographed, and make it back in time. So I go specifically towards companies with that. I think that our audiences, our client base, unless you're like working a network, obviously, like if you're working a referral network, that's different. But one day, you know, I'm shooting students, and the next day I'm shooting CEOs, and what they have in common is really not something that I've found Facebook's algorithm to be terribly good at connecting the dots on, because the breadth is so large.
Then how do you go about, I mean, how can you use Facebook to target, say, a company like Google, or are you doing it a different way?
You can create an audience and then select. So I would go in, I would say my target is, you know, 20 miles around Chicago or 25 miles around Chicago. And then as we work on the demographics, I can set the employer as Google, and it's going to tell me there's 1,300 employees of Google that live in my target area, and I can serve ads specifically to those people.
Fantastic. Does Facebook then give you the option to target other companies, or do they have to be as big or quite large like Google to be able to target them with Facebook ads?
I would say that you're not going to be able to target the doctor's office around the corner with 10 employees. But if you're a Fortune 500 company, you're probably on the list. I don't know. I only go after big companies because it's less expensive that way. The smaller your audience, the more expensive the clicks. But I also go after students that way. So depending on like what the school is, if I'm going after acting students, you can get very specific. And even if it doesn't let you get specific on what program they're in and saying, okay, I only want theater majors, if you take students of XYZ school and then add an interest of theater, you're going to do a pretty decent job. And another thing Facebook does is lets you expand, or you can authorize them to expand on that a little bit and use their algorithm to say, we think that this is going to be a good fit. And honestly, they really do a great job of that. So it's a fantastic tool.
So how do you decide then? And I guess I understand if you're retargeting, it's going to be Facebook. But how do you decide between Google AdWords campaign or a Facebook ad campaign to bring people to your website?
I do a lot of experimenting. I think that like quarterly or at least semi-annually, the algorithms and the tools that they give you update. So at some times, one is more successful than the other. I think that AdWords is better at bringing new traffic to you. And I feel like Facebook is better at retargeting traffic to you. So I think that's like the 1-2 punch. You have to be careful because you can really raise that cost of customer acquisition quickly that way if you're not dialed in on who your audience is. But no, I like to employ a 1-2 punch. And that's why when I am doing the targeted Facebook ads, it's targeted at very specific companies. You know, one thing that I find interesting, or an idea that I'm playing with in my head, is that if we can get to potential clients before they're shopping, they become less price sensitive, meaning the people that are searching on Google or Bing or whatever search engine they're using, they are shopping. They are probably hitting the first 3 to 6 people that show up in search. So they can be somewhat price sensitive because they're looking at other people. But what's cool about the targeted Facebook ads is that you can get to these people before they start shopping. You can plant that seed and you can set the expectation of what your service costs that way. And because they aren't being shown 50 other options right next to you, you got to them first. They're a little bit of an easier client to convert, especially at a higher price point. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. So those ads that are going out to someone that's not even shopping yet, what kind of ads are they? Are you planting the seed of getting a headshot? Are you selling the idea that a headshot is your brand online and you need to have a headshot if you haven't got one? Like, what's the message that's going out to trigger these people into thinking, oh, I need to go and talk to Michael about getting this done?
So message is the word. You nailed it. I think that going back when I first started playing around with ads, I would use my images for the ads. I would use the images of people whose picture I took. And it's hard to get emotional about a headshot of someone you don't know. It's hard to invoke an emotional response to that. So I prefer to use stock imagery in the ads themselves to get them in, because you can find stock images that are easier to create an emotional tie to. I study a lot of different companies' marketing campaigns, and I learn a lot from watching what they do. But it really is the message, and more importantly, it's the transformation. So what does your life look like after your headshot? What does that get you that you don't currently have now? And, you know, creating a message that shows the transformation so that they can stop thinking logically about this decision. You know, this guy's 500, this guy's 200. How do I logically justify this $300 price difference? You're not going to logically justify that. You need to create a scenario where you're emotionally justifying that. Like, this guy gets me. This guy speaks straight to what I need, to my core needs. And I believe that what he's selling is going to change my life. It's going to be the difference of me getting a 10% raise next year. And, you know, if you make 50K and you're going to get a 10% raise, so that's $5,000, what's an extra $200 at that point? And that's what I'm trying to do with my copy. I'm trying to write copy in a way that they envision themselves transformed so that they can make an emotional decision to book me.
I love it. I love it. So am I going to see, I mean, excuse my examples here. Am I going to see the young guy leaning up against a Lamborghini or the female entrepreneur, you know, or the female businesswoman, you know, presenting something to the boardroom, that sort of thing?
I think you're closer on the boardroom idea.
Right.
But I've played around with different things. I've played around with video. I think video's a fun tool. And again, there's lots of stock options for that too. But like the one that I like to use, the video I like to use for the actors, I found this video of this actor walking from backstage to the front of the stage, and the crowd is empty, and he's just kind of looking around, and you can tell it's like, I've made it. Like, it gets to the end and
nice
silence. It's like, I've made it. This is my time.
I love it.
But it just goes to like pulling at those heartstrings and
absolutely
making an emotional connection.
Yeah. I mean, when you first said I use stock photography or stock libraries for my ads, I mean, did you hear the listener going, he doesn't, does he? Because not many photographers would admit or even think about doing that.
Well, how much is it going to, I mean, to be super blunt, my time is valuable. And what is it going to cost me to cast this photo shoot, get access to a space like that, shoot the video, edit the video, like where I can spend $100 and it's all done for me? Why wouldn't I do that? Like an easily justifiable cost.
Yeah, I get it. I do. I think it's great. I think it's fantastic. To bring this back to the listener, let's say you're talking to someone, you're giving them advice. They know they want to get into headshots. They've done some. The phone's not ringing. The contact form's not getting emailed regularly. I mean, you've given us some pretty amazing tactics already. Would you tell them to focus on SEO first? Would you say start running Google AdWords campaigns? Would you say run some Facebook ads? Or, you know, and they've probably got a limited budget. So what's your advice?
All right. That's a great question. I think that people minimize the importance of their website and they put too much emphasis on the importance of their portfolio. I'm going to expand on that a little bit because I know it's a lot to bite off. The average consumer can tell the difference between a bad picture and a good picture, but they can't tell the difference between a good picture and a great picture. As photographers, we train our eyes to see that stuff, but I really don't think that your average Joe Schmo customer is as concerned about your portfolio as you think they are. What you really need is a tight sales experience. I mean, you need to have a story on your website. You need to have a funnel. You need to be able to track the funnel. So you need your analytics and you need to know how to read that stuff. And you need to actively be monitoring it, making changes in real time so that you can refine that process. Because if you spend a whole bunch of money on AdWords and you've got a leaky funnel, then you're just throwing money away. So I feel like it all starts with the website. In tandem with that, and I'm going to get a little geeky for a second, but having a solid backlink profile. So like that is having good PR on the internet. I think that's important. I think that having all of your header tags, those are your systematic way of telling Google what you think is important on your website. Like that has a huge emphasis on what keywords you're going to rank for. So if you can combine those two things, you will eventually start ranking well in search. And I think that that's a slow burn. Like, that's not something you can do this weekend and expect results next week. Depending on how hard you work at it, it might take 3 months. It might take a year. So organic search is a hard thing to go after, but none of it matters. You can have a ton of traffic that you shove into a bad funnel and make no money, or you can have zero traffic put into an awesome funnel and make no money. So you really have sure. to treat them of equal importance. Whatever your traffic source is, whether it's organic or it's search or it's AdWords or Facebook ads, whatever your funnel source is, whatever your traffic source is, you need to have a tight website, a tight funnel, so that you can convert those visitors into clients.
Yeah, I totally agree. So just quickly for the listener, if they're unfamiliar with header tags, if they've got a plugin, if they're using a WordPress site and they have something like Yoast SEO, they can set the header tags in there, can't they, for each page of their website?
Well, I was more speaking to the point of like your H1 tags, your H2 tags. So whether it's Squarespace or WordPress or whatever your website editor is, you've usually got a drop down option. And whether like this is a paragraph, it's usually what people use to style the text on their page. So like they might want this to be like in bold at the top of a paragraph. So they'll select H1. And what you're really doing is telling Google you think this is important, so I want to rank for this. But more often than not, that's not the keyword you want to rank for. Like, you're putting things to think about when being photographed or whatever. I mean, you're just making something up off the top of your head to summarize the paragraph when, like, that's an awesome opportunity to lock in on a keyword and tell Google, hey, I think this is important and I want to rank for it.
Got it. That's cool. All right. That's a great tip. So you talked a lot about having a leaky funnel and the funnel, I guess, being the website or the part of the funnel. What makes a good website good and what makes a bad website bad? Like, what is this budding headshot photographer? How does he know or she know that they've got a solid, good website?
I think that calls to action typically make for a good website. So if you've got your prices on your homepage and your contact form on your homepage, you've given the visitor really no reason to ever click off your homepage. So that's going to make for a high bounce rate, meaning people come to your website and leave right away because they get all of the information they need immediately. So I feel like the first thing that I look for when I'm reviewing someone's website is there a clear call to action? Is there a reason to leave the homepage? And I like personally to repeat that call to action over and over because people like repetition. They like to recognize things. So I think that's a big thing. I think having a message, like having a story, I think that as photographers, we do two things. And I mentioned this before. We put a lot of emphasis on our portfolio. So anyone that's got nothing but pictures on their homepage, I think you're wasting a huge opportunity. So that's one. And then two, they position themselves as the hero of their story. And I'm going to explain that a little bit because when we write copy, the easiest thing to write about is ourselves. We know ourselves better than most other people do. So we start writing this copy and we think of our whole website as a bio, and it's not about you. It's about your customer or your potential customer and convincing them that you are the only choice for them. So the more that you can make them the hero of the story, the more likely they are to listen to what you have to say.
And when you talk about making them the hero, this is then planting these seeds of how they're going to look, how they're going to feel, what they're going to get from life after they get this headshot from you. Is that what you mean by the story?
Yeah, it's their journey. It's not your journey. You're there to help them. So stop writing about yourself. Like, you really have to give a lot of thought, like, who is your target customer? Because once you can truly define who your target customer is and what their motives are and what they're hoping to accomplish, it becomes a lot easier to write for them. And once you can do that, then you can get them on your team. And it's not a hard sell. It becomes like they're asking for permission to book you. It's kind of like making friends. Like, you don't want to be the guy that is jumping up and down saying, hey, be my friend. You want the people to come to you. And that's what a good sales funnel will do for you.
And you do this beautifully on your website, don't you? Because you give me every reason to absorb your homepage and then choose who I am. Am I the corporate guy looking for a headshot, or am I the actor trying to live my dream? And they're the choices. So I've got to choose one of those. As soon as I click one of those options and you give me those options a few times, then I've automatically put myself into a bucket, and you can start to talk to me on my terms and make me the hero of my story. And you've also tagged me with your Facebook pixel. It's beautiful.
Exactly.
I love it. All right. So, I mean, you talked about calls to action. Can you have too many calls to action on a page?
So the way that I like to look at it is, each time you scroll, like, think about scrolling through a website kind of like flipping through a PDF. So each time you scroll is a new page. And I like to think of the calls to actions as the period to the sentence. So that's my limit. I don't want to ever have two calls to action on one page, but I'm going to tell you something that I hope you connect with, and I'm going to close that statement off with a call to action.
So what about this new photographer that you're giving advice to? Should they have their prices on their website, or should we make it a downloadable PDF that you have to opt in for so I can, remarket through email?
That's a great question that I think it depends on who your clientele is. It depends on how much traffic you're getting. It depends on what else you're doing for remarketing. As I mentioned, I find Facebook to be a much better tool for remarketing than email campaigns. My open rate, especially once you got to like email 8, 9, 10, was in like the 30% range. So you don't even know if they're really even seeing any of it, where at least on Facebook, they throw it in their face.
Hang on, isn't 30% open rate? That's a great open rate.
I mean, it is, but you got to wonder what happened to those other 70%.
True. But that's what internet marketers are telling us. Anything over 10% is amazing. But I think you're asking the right question.
But if you're only getting like 10 people to opt in a week and 7 are ignoring you and 3 are following along, your likelihood of getting enough business to stay alive is relatively low. And that's why that traffic is so important. I mean, realistically, if you're beating 80-20 on opt-ins for people that get to the page where you can opt in, and what I mean by that is, all right, 100 people come to your homepage, 50% of them bounce. Then the other 50%, so 50 people are going to get to a page that allows them to opt in. So you've got these 50 people, and 80% of those people aren't going to opt in. Like, that's just kind of a well-accepted statistic. So you get 20% of those people to opt in. So 20% of 50 is 10 people. Yeah. So that goes right back to what I was saying before.
Perfect.
If you get 10 people to opt in and 70% of them aren't even going to look at the emails, then of those 100 visitors, you've only got 3 potential clients. So it really does require a lot of traffic. Does that all make sense?
It does. Yeah. So what you're telling me there really is, I don't want to be paying too much for those Google AdWord clicks. The long game of getting better at SEO is going to be it's going to be more effective in the long term, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Until I've got some money to spend on AdWords that I can put into it.
You got that right.
Cool. Okay. So let's say this new photographer, they're listening and they think, okay, this is gold, which I'm sure they are. They know, okay, I can't spend too much on the clicks through an AdWords campaign. I haven't got much SEO juice yet. So really the best option is Facebook ads.
I think so.
Premium members of PhotoBiz Exposed hear more of the best photography business strategies from every guest.
Last question, Michael, on this stuff. What software are you using to show me the gallery?
The gallery in studio or the gallery you go home with?
Go home with. Is it something like PicTime or ShootProof?
I am using Sprout Studio at the moment.
Okay, cool. Which is an all-in-one CRM for photographers.
Yes.
Fantastic. Now, I haven't even mentioned this to the listener yet about you, Michael, but the reason you sound so amazing, like some radio personality, is you actually have a studio because you built the studio to teach all this stuff. Mate, I could keep you on here for another couple of hours, but probably more. But you actually teach all this stuff to budding headshot photographers or to headshot photographers that are looking to generate more business, more income?
Yeah, anyone that wants to grow their headshot business, I think, is a good fit for this. I think to the point where you're ready to build a website or you've started a website and you feel kind of lost, you're probably going to benefit from this. And it's been cool. We create a whole bunch of video content. I spend, on Mondays from 7 to 8 Central Time. We do a live website review that's open to anyone that wants to check it out. On from 8 to like 9:30-ish that same night, we do our live classroom, which is part of the class. Then on Thursdays, we do something that's part of the class we call Think Tank Thursday. And it really is like brainstorming and talking about, you know, what's working and what's not. We use a platform called Crowdcast for that. So I can bring people on screen. Everyone can share their desktops. Like, we can really kind of dig into the details. On Wednesdays, I do a portrait talk on Peter Hurley's Headshot Crew. I run the portrait track there. So I spend a lot of time on camera. So having this studio was kind of one way for me to up my production value.
Awesome. So the very first class you talked about, the website reviews, do you have to be a member of your group to be part of that? Or is that for everyone?
That's basically one of my sales funnels. I mean, we've been talking about sales funnels. That is to introduce people to my process. And you can submit your website to be reviewed. And we will go through one website a week. And what was cool, recently, I was with a buddy and we were at a conference and we were talking about websites. And he's like, let me see your website. So I pull it up on my phone and I'm showing it to him. And it was the first time that I had ever had my website reviewed from a mobile perspective, just because we happened to be on a mobile phone when we were talking about it. So I had this idea, hey, this next time we do the live website reviews, we're going to do a mobile review. So
nice.
It completely like turned things, like the dude who was the victim that night, the guy whose website we tried to help out, it probably wasn't fair. But I think everyone watching learned a lot because we had never really talked specifically about the mobile experience before. And the mobile experience is crucial. And I think that's where AdWords is really going to take over moving forward. Because if you search for something on mobile, the whole screen, the whole first scroll is AdWords. So it's not like you can ignore it. Like, it really is like the first thing you see. So when I'm running campaigns or when I'm reviewing the campaigns of people in the class and they're running AdWords campaigns, their mobile user rate jumps through the roof, which I find fascinating. So moving, I mean, as we become more mobile centric and these phones become our life, I think that AdWords is going to become a bigger part of it. And your mobile experience is going to become that much more important. It all ties together.
I imagine, especially for a headshot photographer, you're having clients actually search for and book a photographer on mobile.
Yes.
Now, I don't want to mess up. First of all, just before I ask you where the course is the course, is it like a... is it a mentoring thing? Is it an actual course structure that I go through from start to finish? How does it work?
So it's a subscription, and we have a Facebook group that if you've got a subscription, you're also part of the Facebook group. But all of the content is on my website, and we refer to as the dashboard. And the dashboard has links to 3 weeks' worth of content. So you do the week one homework, and then that following Monday, we talk about that content. And then you do the week two homework, and that following Monday, we talk about the content and so on and so forth. Then, you know, once you get through that, there's advanced stuff. Like, let's say that you want to have a chat widget on your website. We've got, I think there's like 4 videos on how to set up Chatra. That's the chat widget that I find to work the best. Let's say that you want to install Acuity on your website. I think there's a very specific way to set up Acuity that is going to make for the best user experience. So we've got 4 videos on how to set that up. And the platform then kind of becomes your marketing hub. We've got tools for checking your H1 and H2 tags. You get a weekly report of your traffic and the keywords and all that jazz. So like, I'm trying to leverage an awesome group of people. Like, we're trying to kind of work together so that we all have access to these tools that would be cost prohibitive otherwise. If we work together as a team, we can, you know, amortize these costs over the group, and we give you access to these tools. So you come in originally for the classes, and hopefully you stay for the community and the additional content. And some of that additional content is what we focus on in the Tink Thursday stuff.
Very cool. I love it. I love it. Do you also talk about the Facebook advertising, retargeting, Google AdWords?
All of it.
Awesome. Unreal. Where do people go to find out more about it?
Michael-Schacht.com. That's S-C-H-A-C-H-T.
Cool. I'll add links to that and all the social media profiles in the show notes. And one last thing, Michael, the cost of the course, is that somewhere?
$99 a month.
Oh, easy. Cool. Done. Mate, let me finish off with asking you, have you ever had an embarrassing moment or a stuff up that you're happy to share?
Yeah, I wouldn't even know where to start. So I'm just going to pull the most recent one. I had a bunch of photographer friends at the studio recently, and Peter Hurley was in town and hanging out with us. And he turns to me and he goes, I need a photograph to give to Westcott to use for some marketing stuff. And he's like, will you shoot me? And like, there's like 8 or 9 people hanging around, and it's 11 o'clock at night, and we've been creating video content all day long. And I'm like, sure. So like, not really thinking about it. And like, I guess I should also say that this guy's my mentor. Like, this is the guy who attribute a whole bunch of my success to. So I'm framing up this shot and we're getting the lighting dialed in, and it comes time to start directing him. And I'm like, I got to direct Peter Hurley. Like, what do I say to that? And my mind's fried.
Didn't you say hold the pizza?
So he's got a handful of rules. And one of them is to never tell anyone to relax. And it was the first thing that came out of my mouth. Like, I was like, you need to relax, man. You're all tense. And he's like, did you really just tell me to relax? Like, oh, my God. All right, I need to get this done and move on. So it was not my best photo shoot, but we got a cool picture of him. And that's all that matters in the end. But if you're not making a mistake a day, then you're not trying hard enough. So
that is so cool.
I'm all for making mistakes as long as you learn from them.
I agree with you. And I don't think there's anything more stressful than photographing another photographer, let alone your mentor. Like that. Scary stuff. Hey, Michael, you have been an absolute pleasure, mate. You've been a goldmine of information. I can't wait to get this out to the listeners. So just a massive thanks to me, and on behalf of the listener too, thanks so much for sharing your knowledge with us today.
No, thanks for having me. This has been a blast.
I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. Michael, if you're listening, mate, thank you so much. I love the way you approach your website, your marketing, your advertising, and what you shared was just fantastic. Thank you so much. For you, the listener, like I said, I hope you got as much from Michael as I did. I loved what he had to share. I love the advanced strategies that he's using in his business via Facebook ads and retargeting. Very, very cool. You definitely have to give that a go if you haven't already. If there was another takeaway, if there was something that you thought, yeah, I'm absolutely going to be using that in my business, I would love to hear about it. Let me know in the comments area of the show notes, and you can find them at photobizx.com/292. Now, in those show notes, I've also got links to anything and everything that Michael mentioned, including his website, his social media profiles, where you can get coaching and learn from Michael. And I've also got some examples of his fantastic work. It's all there in the show notes, photobizx.com/292. Oh, and if you are a premium member, I'll be adding Michael into the members Facebook group. So if you have a follow-up question for him, if there was something that I didn't ask that you wish that I did, you can fire away inside the group.
It's shout out time.
I've got a few big shout outs for today's episode. And the first one goes to Camera Mam from the USA. So I'm guessing this is a woman, a female photographer in the US. So Camera Mam, you have to let me know exactly who you are, because I want to add a link to your website using the anchor text that you're looking to rank for in the show notes. It's a little way that I can help to say a proper thanks by providing you with a great backlink to your website. So let me know who you are, Camera Mam. And I've got to say a massive thanks to you, because you've left a review for the Photography Experiment podcast and the Photo Biz X podcast. So 2 reviews in 1 week. Absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much. I love that you're enjoying both podcasts, and I love that you're getting so much from the episodes or the interviews and the guests every single week. That is just fantastic. It's great to have you listening and part of it all. I've also got a big shout out for Damien Moa. He is a UK-based photographer. He says he's addicted to the podcast. He's loving what he's learning from each of the interviews, and he says that it's a must listen for photographers of all genres. So Damien, mate, thank you so much. I've added a link to your website in today's show notes. So I'm hoping and expecting that you'll see a nice little bump for the search term that you're looking to rank for inside of Google over the coming weeks. So mate, again, thanks so much for taking the time to leave that review.
You're listening to Photo Biz Exposed with your host, Andrew Helmich.
I have a couple of announcements before we close out today's episode. The first one is all about Mark at ShotKit or ShotKit.com. Now, you would have heard of Mark Condon in the past. I've interviewed him because of his successful photography business, his wedding photography business, Gold Hat Photography. He was Sydney-based. He's now moved to Queensland. So I'm looking forward to doing a follow-up interview with Mark and hearing about how he's kickstarting his photography business after relocating. But that's not what I wanted to tell you about today. He has put together this fantastic blog post slash resource page of tools and services that he uses every day inside his wedding photography business. And it's over at shotkit.com. I've got a link to it in the show notes, but he's basically listed, I think, 38 different tools and services, like I said, that he uses. They help him to stay efficient and productive. And he loves every single one of these. He's used them, and that's why he's talking about them there. So I had a great time scrolling through that, not only because PhotoBizX was part of it, or the Facebook ads course, which Mark does use, by the way, but there were so many things in there, some that I recognized, some that were totally new to me. So check that out. It's a fantastic list. It's beautifully written and put together. Mark is a talented blogger, and he really knows what he's doing over there at shotkit.com.
PhotoBizX.com. Real advice, real strategies, and real ideas to build your photography business.
This next announcement is kind of just for premium members, but if you're listening to the free podcast episode and you want to get involved with this, this would be a fantastic reason to become a premium member. What I put out there a few months ago was the idea that each member could, if they wanted to, review a single podcast episode. And what they would do would be to listen to the episode and only take note of the actionable steps from what the guest shared. So nothing about their bio, just what they heard that they would want to or think that another photographer would want to implement that that guest shares. Now, not only would they take a note of what those things were and document those, they'd also document the timestamp when that came up in the episode, in the premium episode that they were listening to and reviewing. With that information, I was going to be creating a PDF with each of those episode reviews. When I floated the idea inside the members Facebook group, it was super well received. We set up the Excel spreadsheet, well, the Google spreadsheet, for members to go on and select the interview that they wanted to review. And from memory, there were about 100 photographers that put their hand up to review one of the episodes. And the plan was that whoever reviews an episode will get a copy of the complete PDF when it's done. So they'll get the show notes, if you like. They're not really show notes, so these are more detailed. They'll get the PDF episode review from every other member that also reviewed an episode. Well, we're underway and putting together the PDFs. I've got an example of one of the PDF pages inside the show notes, and it features Kirk Mashton, so you can see exactly what you'd be signing up for. And the plan is to put together a proper resource that goes into the actionable steps that are shared in each and every episode. So if you want to get involved with that, actually, what I should say first is if you're a member and you're hearing this and you're feeling guilty because you haven't actually completed your project, your episode review, then I'd love for you to get on and get that done as soon as possible so we can keep working on these PDFs. The plan was to have these out by Christmas. That was going to be my Christmas present to members, but I just don't think they will all be done in time. So I'm right to get them done, but I just need the reviews done. And for me to tackle almost 300 it just wasn't going to happen. So I really need your help if you want to get involved with this. So if you are a member or if you're a free listener and want to become a member to get hold of this PDF document, then I've got a link inside the members show notes for this episode where you can go to that Google spreadsheet, choose your episode, and get your review done. I expect it'll take around an hour. So listen to the interview only. You're not listening to any of the prelude or the after interview rambling by me. This is purely to review the episode and document the actionable steps. And there's instructions on the Google sheet when you go to that link. So again, whoever gets involved with this, whoever reviews an episode and sends me their notes, they will get a copy of the completed PDF when it's done. And I've got to tell you, it looks very, very cool and it's easy to follow. I think this will be a great resource when it's done. So more details in the show notes if you want those. The very last thing I wanted to share for today's episode is episode 300 is coming up and I really want your help for this episode. I want to make it something special, but I want to make it all about you. So what I need you to do, what I would love you to do, what I'm asking you to do is record an audio file telling me who you are, where you're based, what you do, and then sharing one tip, can be two if you like, one or two things that you've learned from the interviews that you've heard on PhotoBizX that you've actually put into action and seen have made a difference to your business. And it can be anything. It can be from episode one all the way through to probably last week's episode, because you wouldn't have had a chance to interview what Michael shares in today's interview. So you can do this on your phone. It's super easy. Just record a voice memo. It'll be an MP3 file. Email that to me, andrew@photobizx.com. I expect it'll be around 1 to 2 minutes. If you have lots of ums and ahs or you make mistakes, just keep recording. Start from where you made the mistake, go again, and I can edit and make you sound like a radio personality. Well, close to it. I'll do what I can to clean up the audio and make you sound as good as I possibly can. Now, included with that email, if you send me a link to your website and the keyword phrase that you're looking to rank for, I'm going to add a link in the show notes from episode 300 to help you with your SEO as well. But really, I want to make the episode about you. It's for you. I want to hear what you've implemented as a result of listening to the podcast. And this is open to you whether you are a premium member or a free listener. If you've learned something and implemented it and it's worked, tell me about it and be a part of episode 300. So get onto that. Don't, you know, when you hear this, if you hear this episode a few weeks after it's been released, it's still not too late. Just try and get that audio to me as soon as you possibly can, because I want to have you as part of the show. Alrighty, that is it for this episode of the podcast. I'm about to finish editing this. I'll get this out to you. And then I have to pack my bags quickly because Linda has crazily booked a trip to Bali. It's a mad time of year to be going away. I mean, in last week's episode, I was saying how under the pump I am. So much going on. So many things I want to be doing. And we're off to Bali. That's crazy. And, you know, you're probably asking why. Why go to Bali now before Christmas when holidays are coming up? It's because of good marketing. Linda subscribes to an email from a site called iknowthepilot.com. She gets these daily deals or weekly deals emailed to her. And if something lines up and it's a great deal like this Bali trip was, then there's no stopping her. she books it and we're going if there's some space in the diary. I'll still be online. I'll still be working a little bit when I'm over there. I'll certainly be there tomorrow morning for the third-party marketing intensive course. I'll still be hosting our mastermind group for our special group that gets together every Tuesday afternoon. And of course, there'll still be an episode coming out to you next week. So it's a semi-holiday for me, but I reckon it's going to be a pretty cool place to do some work. Whatever you're doing, have an amazing week. I intend to, that's for sure. And I will talk to you next week. Bye for now.
Enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.